Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 2 of Season 5 Movie Raw Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Rennie Harlan-directed and Bruce Willis-starring action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Jake Cluett of the Con Air podcast and the Deep Blue Sea podcast. Welcome back to the show, Jay.
Sorry, I'm not Italian.
What can you do? There's certain things that you don't have a choice about. But we're in the heart of democracy, so.
Indeed. One hand washes the other.
There you go. So minute two begins with John continuing to try and get out of a ticket and ends with a large crowd gathering by the information booth. So we ended things off yesterday with John talking to Joey Tribbiani's father, the actor Robert Costanza, trying to get him to agree not to write a ticket. So he continues to explain that, his mother-in-law already hates him, and he continues by saying, because I'm not a dentist. Look, I'm a cop. LAPD. How about Team Spirit? Whoa, I was in L.A. once. Hated it. I can understand. I don't like it much. Hey! Then he screams at the tow truck guy. He goes, hey, that's a plastic fender up there. Take it easy. Then he turns back to the cop and says, cut me some slack, will ya? I was a cop in New York. I only moved to L.A. because my wife took a job there. What do you say? Here we are in Washington, D.C., the heart of democracy. One hand washes the other. Come on, man. It's Christmas. So I love that they take this part of the minute, which basically it's about 30 seconds, to quickly recap the changes between Die Hard and Die Hard 2.
Beautifully done. It's natural exposition, or kind of. It's a little clunky. But I like they get it out of the way. It's like, yeah, this is da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm here. My wife's up there. We did this thing. Yeah, okay.
Correct. It's a little strange the whole thing that he actually would move to L.A. because of all this. His whole excuse was that he's too busy with the type of work that he's doing in New York. I know that's partially it was an excuse. But there is some truth to it also. You would think, and obviously by seeing both Die Hard and Die Hard 3, you also see that the type of police work that is done in New York is very different than the police work done in L.A.
See, I think it makes sense for him to have moved to L.A. at the end of
Die Hard. Well, he didn't have a choice if he wanted to save his marriage.
Well, this is true. So in Die Hard, he realized two things. He realized how much he still loves his wife. Because when she was in danger, he was desperate to save her, so he wants to be with her. Also realized that whilst he has a long, several years worth of criminals he was still trying to chase in New York, they still have criminals in L.A. as well.
Yes.
They're just as bad. So he could come down and save them too.
It's a different, I've always seen, when you look at movies or TV shows that take place in L.A. and things that take place in New York is much grittier. And John McClane seems to fit into the grittier aspect of it than the non-gritty aspect of L.A. Type of crimes you see in L.A., at least on the level of where he's working, it seems like they're more white-collar type crimes. He's not in, the back alleys and stuff like that as a detective. He might be, but he's talking with, later on in the movie, he's talking with his quote-unquote partner, Al Powell.
Yeah.
And, he's not in the back roads area of L.A. or whatever it is. I don't know. It's needed for the movie. It's needed to explain why John and Holly are back together and they're still together, stuff like that. In the next movie, they don't really explain very well what happened. We'll get there hopefully in two seasons from now. It's a throwaway line in the movie.
As you've said, he feels out of place in LA, so we can only assume that he felt the same way by the time of the third film, and that's why he's back in New York.
Apparently his his relationship with Holly, there were bumps along the way. Even after all the events of this movie, because at the end of this movie, spoiler for anyone who hasn't watched the whole movie, and if you haven't, I recommend strongly that you go and watch it right now before you listen to all the rest of the 124 minutes that we're going to talk about this movie, because it'll make more sense if you've seen the movie. You know, they seem quite happy at the end of this movie. You know, this is the second time that he's quote unquote saved her, you know, and their love seems to be there to stay.
I mean, they seem happy at the start of this movie as well, because at the end of the movie, they have other things to celebrate.
Correct.
So the start of this movie is kind of them in mid-relationship, not in peril.
Yeah.
Or out of peril.
And right.
So the fact they seem happy then, I think, is more
correct. Important. Yeah, I think so too. I mean, it's funny that the response from Vito, the cop, you know, he's like, oh, I was in LA once, I hated it. So what does that have to do with anything? It's like, just because you hate where I'm from, that's why you're not going to help me. You know, he's trying to look at you know, what's it called, the blue wall.
Yeah. I don't know, not an expression I'm familiar with.
No, the blue wall is like cops are caring for one another. You know, blue bloods, blue wall.
I see.
Things like that.
What?
And... But then again, we'll get into it. But Vito's not really a cop. You know, he's an airport policeman. So it's not the same.
And McClane's just trying to appeal to his humanity. But he's already started writing the ticket, so John should know that it's already begun. He can't go back at that point. It's again, still I'm still on Vito's side.
Yeah,
it's still John's fault. Take the ticket.
Yeah. I'm on Vito's side too, but I don't like his response by saying, you know, well, I was in LA once, I hated it. And if he would have said, oh, I was in New York once, I loved it, so okay, I'm gonna throw away the ticket. You know, it's like it doesn't sound like that's something that would really have helped in this case.
Maybe why Vito hated being in LA was because of the LAPD. Because that's what John says, oh, I'm LAPD. And maybe that's the reason Vito, like, this is, you ruined my trip. I something about the LAPD ruined his trip there. And that's why John has to
maybe he got a ticket.
There we go. That's what inspired him to become an airport cop, was so that he could get one back at anyone visiting DC from LA.
That's right. He's looking for people who are waiting to pick people up from LA. There you go. Oh, you want to go to LA? Huh? There you go. I'm going to give you a ticket.
I think that's it.
Correct. And again, I like the fact that this is, you know, going back to what we were talking about yesterday about the fact that this is probably taking place in 1989. So we're only talking a year or two from when John, you know, saved Nakatomi.
Yeah.
So, you know, it shows that it's still a new transition for John also, the fact that he's in L.A. You know, this script will get a little bit more into that. We'll talk about that at the end of this minute. There is some lines that relate to this, that they expand a little more on this. But I, you know, I like the way that they do this here. Now, also, he says the heart of democracy. What the hell does that have to do with anything? So they're the heart of democracy. What does democracy have to do with letting me off of a ticket?
He's clutching at straws. He's rambling, he's spiraling, he's using anything he can think of.
For sure, but it's just funny that you know, he's saying the heart of democracy, Washington, D.C., you know, one hand washes the other. You know, there are just some very interesting phrases here. You know, the team spirit, I can sort of understand.
Yeah.
But the rest of them, don't, like, what is one hand washing the other? Like, what is John doing for him? that he should be getting, you know, reciprocity for. You know, one hand washing the other means I do something for you, you do something for me. Okay, what am I?
Yeah.
I'm making it so you don't have to, you know, so you don't have to write up a ticket. I don't know.
That's it. You know, spoiler for the end of the film, that makes sense, because, like, John saves the day, they tear his ticket up. It's gross.
Correct.
But
that's true.
That's not, it doesn't apply yet. In 2 hours' correct. Time, maybe.
Exactly. So what do you know about Washington, D.C.?
I have been there briefly, just like as a passing through on a short vacation. But other than that, it's where The West Wing is set and many other shows take place around the American politics. And the DC stands for District of Columbia. Yes. Not a great deal. I don't know much about most American places.
Okay, that's fair. So Washington, DC, which is also known as the District of Columbia. It's also known as Washington. It's known as the District. It's known as D.C. So it is the capital city and a federal district of the U.S. It's located on the east bank of the Potomac River, and it borders Virginia and Maryland to the north and to the east. It was named for, you know who it was named for, don't you, Jay? That at least you know, right?
George something, yeah.
Exactly. George Washington, the first president, the founding father of the U.S. So when they wrote the Constitution, they provided for a federal district that's under the exclusive jurisdiction of the Congress, and that they called Washington, D.C. It's not part of any state, and it is also not a state of itself. And people who live there, you know, you have Georgetown, Alexandria. Those are partially recognized as part of Washington, D.C., even though they are still part of Maryland or Virginia. And basically, they have a person in the House of Representatives, but there's no senator from D.C. because it's not a state. There are 131 neighborhoods in it. And according to the census in 2020, there are 689,000 people that live in Washington, D.C. It is the 23rd most populous city in the U.S. Also, it is the most is one of the most visited cities in the U.S. There are more than 20 million visitors that show up in Washington every year.
Yep.
I've been to Washington a few times myself. They have like tons of museums there. My favorite is the Air and Space Museum. You would like that too, Jay.
Well, we did not visit.
If you're ever there,
we did not visit any of the museums when we were there. We did an open bus stop tour, and that was about it. We were there for a couple of days.
Right. So that's Washington. And you know, the one hand washes the other. It's a very strange phrase. It's basically a proverb that originated in Germany, that you can find it in a work from 1599, where when translated into, it's a German work, which when you translate into English, it's as it were, one hand washeth another and one man aideth another. So again, it goes back to the whole idea of someone helping someone else and getting something back in return for it, which again, in this case, I don't see it.
Yeah, no, it doesn't seem to fit, but it does.
Yeah, and apparently Vito doesn't buy it either. Even the final, you know, push that John gives by saying, "Hey, come on, it's Christmas."
Oh, that's a really cool. Yeah, it does. It doesn't make sense, but it does. It does work for the situation the character is in, just trying to scramble and clutch his straws and say anything to try and get this guy out of the ticket. It's a lost cause.
Correct. And then Vito says, "I asked Santa Claus to give you another car. Merry Christmas, pal." And he gives him the ticket, and he goes, "It's all yours, Murray." You hear in the background, "You got it, Vito."
So how many times that day has somebody said to Vito, "Come on, it's Christmas," and he's given that exact same, "Oh, Santa Claus for a new car." Like, is that his stock response to that, like, that response that week? Like, somebody's like, "Come on, it's Christmas."
That actually makes sense.
Like, it's got to be.
That makes sense.
He's got to have that in the chamber. Yeah.
Yeah. So we never see him, but we hear the character Murray. Do you know who plays Murray?
Brenny Harmon.
David Willis Sr. Okay. Bruce Willis's father.
That makes sense.
So okay. It's pretty ironic that Bruce Willis's father is the one towing his car away. Or at least he does the voice, whether it's actually him or not, I don't know. He's credited on IMDb.
Then it must be true.
I don't know if it's true or not, but that's, you know, we take it at face value. So do you know what the name Murray means?
No. As you and I have talked about, I don't think names have meanings, but there we are.
Well, apparently this one does. It is it comes from British origin. That means from the sea town.
Okay. Fine.
Okay. And now, as we know, this can be either a first name or a last name. Okay. Do you know any famous people's first names Murray?
Yep, there's Murray Walker.
First name.
Murray Walker is a sports commentator in the UK.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've never even heard of
think,
Murray Walker.
I think so he does. I think he does Formula One racing. Murray. That's the only one I can think of.
Yeah, okay, there you go. You have Murray Walker, who is an English motorsport commentator and pundit, who passed away in 2021. He was 98.
He did.
Wow.
Yeah, he was doing it until, like, I hate sport. I hate watching sport, but he's like a really recognizable voice.
Wow.
Oh, kind of thing. He's a real. He was a character. But that's the only Murray I can think of.
Right. Okay, well, the biggest named Murray that I know is F. Murray Abraham, who is an American
not
actor.
A first name? That's a middle name. But there we go.
All right, but he's known by that. If it's F, it means that he doesn't care about his first name, and that's the one he goes by.
Fine.
What do you think people call him? Do they call him F, or do they call him Murray when they're speaking to him?
I'd call him Abe. I'd call him Abe.
Could be. Yeah.
I'd call him Salieri.
Exactly. That's true. That is who he is. And what about last names? Can you think of any famous people with a last name?
Yeah, there's all of Bill Murray's
That's
brothers.
Right. There's Bill Murray and his family. So, yeah, you got Bill Murray, you got Brian Doyle Murray. I think John is one of them. I don't remember all four.
One of them's in Mad Men. I can't remember which one.
It's probably Brian Doyle Murray because I.
It's not Brian Doyle. No? It's a different one.
I never thought that any of the Murrays, besides the two of them, amounted to much. You know, I know that one of them is
Joel.
Okay, maybe Joel. Yeah. Joel is the one who's also in Scrooged, isn't he? He's the one who plays his brother, doesn't he?
Pass.
I don't know. Pass. Who are you passing to?
Hang on, I'm just trying to have a look.
Joel.
Joel Murray is in Mad Men. He's Fred. I think he misses himself in one episode.
Right, I'm pretty sure Joel was the one who was in Scrooged.
Yeah, he plays Guest in Scrooged, which is his brother.
Oh, so maybe it's not his brother. Maybe it's John who plays the brother. It's one of the other brothers, or it's the fourth brother. The fourth brother is John.
It's John. Yeah. John plays James Cross.
Correct, and he was also in Movie Violations. I always found him very funny in that one. You know,
I have not seen him.
Not up to par with his brother, but it is a pretty funny spoof of, you know, it's about a group of people who need they need to do a driving course, you know, so he tries to act like his brother, but doesn't work completely.
I see.
Oh, well. And then after this, John basically mutters under his breath, son of a bitch. What I found it very interesting that the term bitch became more prominent over time, meaning in the beginning of the 1900s, it mostly referred to a dog. And then little by little, it started referring to women or the fact of son of a bitch and stuff like that. Where it, you know, nowadays, whenever you use that phrase, most people will not associate it. Their first association will not be the dog. So it also means to, you know, someone who's dissatisfied with something, complaining about them. You know, it's a way of complaining, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So at that point, the shot changes, and you know, John basically has agreed to the fact that this is what's happening. There's no way of him getting out of it, and you know, at least he doesn't have to worry about parking at this point.
Yeah. Well, the car being towed away adds a element of finality to the situation, sure. I guess.
Yes. And then his pager begins to beep. And he picks it up and looks at it. You know, he seems, first of all, until he finds the beeper, it's pretty funny. You know, and then the shot changes and we get to see the inside of the airport. We see this huge Christmas tree. We see lots of people walking around. We see a whole bunch of people. You know, it's a very overcrowded airport. This was filmed in LAX. even though it's supposed to be Washington, D.C. You know, this is one of the things that I got from the commentary from Rennie Harlan, you know, that he talks about the fact that, you know, you have the outside shot taking place in Denver and then the inside shot taking place in L.A. and, you know, the way that things keep changing.
Movie magic.
Movie magic that we will talk about, I think, tomorrow as to the or maybe it's even on Thursday, the problem with that movie magic. But we'll get there. We'll get there. And so they give us a nice panning shot of, like, it goes down from top to the bottom of the Christmas tree. We can see a whole bunch of people crowded around the information booth. And we even can see the area for NEA, Northeast Airlines, which is a fictional airline used for this movie. But I like that they went forth and did and used and gave us the detail of, you know, having a ticketing area, you know, for Northeast Airlines, you know, in order to make it seem as realistic as possible. You know, you have the ticket counter and stuff like that. And that's pretty much how this minute ends. So, Jay, did you have anything else to say?
Yeah, there's some music that We Wish You a Merry Christmas is playing in the background.
Yes.
Just to cement in that this is a Christmas.
Oh, this is Christmas. That's what that tree is for, right?
For no reason. Yeah, there we go. Which it's a very English Christmas carol. Wish You a Merry Christmas, talking about figgy pudding.
Right. No, it's actually interesting that you mentioned about the music, because tomorrow, you know, we get different music. So, you know, it's just a few seconds of the elevator music, basically, of hearing, you know, Wish You a Merry Christmas.
And I had a note for yesterday, but I want to talk about today instead. Bruce Willis in a cardigan does not seem right to me. I don't know what it is about it, but I know it's cold weather. It makes sense, but just Bruce Willis does not belong in a cardigan. it's just wrong.
Well, so apparently, whoever dressed him didn't feel that way. What can I tell you about that? All right, you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get to the script?
Nope.
All right, so the script is pretty much the same. There's just a few minor changes here. So when Vito says to John, I was in LA once, I hated it. So John's response is, I can relate to that. I hate it myself. And then, you know, he screams to the tow truck guy, to his father, basically. And then he says, see, I used to be a New York cop. I still got my ID somewhere. And he, like, it says that he starts shuffling around looking for an ID. And then he says, I only moved because my wife got promoted. As opposed to my wife got a job there. And they said, look, maybe we can sell this right here. We're in Washington, heartbeat of democracy, one hand washes the other. It makes it sound as if he's trying to bribe him by the way that he says it. Let's settle this right here.
I looked for my New York ID. It's in my wallet.
That's crazy. And hey.
Oh, look, what else is it? What else I just found?
Hey, I found a $20 bill. Hey,
this isn't mine.
That's right. So I don't know. And then it continues along and it's, you know, they drives away and then McLean tries to convince him and says, it's Christmas. Hey, come on, it's Christmas. So then he says, so ask Santa to bring you another car. But the car's already gone by that point.
So, hey, Murray, no, back it up. Back it. We changed our mind.
That's right. And then it says, you son of a, and then it gets cut off because he gets beeped. And this is the beep drowns out his last word. McLean sweeps aside his coat, finds the beeper on his belt. He looks at the obviously unfamiliar number on the readout in puzzlement and then runs into the terminal. So, yeah, it's a very strange way to do it. I'm glad that they changed it. I like it better in the movie.
Yes.
Yeah. So every Tuesday we have a new segment called Disaster Tuesday, where we're going to talk a little bit about some airplane disasters that have actually happened over the years that are somewhat related. Because this.
Oh, good. Keeping it light. Good. It's wonderful.
Well, we're trying to keep it real, not just keeping it light. We're keeping it real. You know, the movie has an airplane crash. For spoiler for those who haven't figured that out yet or haven't seen that. But, you know.
It has at least one.
Yes, that's true. Well, there's one crash. The other one, I don't know if you can call it a crash. It's more of an explosion.
It doesn't end well.
No, that's true. So my first question for you, Jay, is and now I know where you're from, and I don't know if you keep it, you know, keep that information secret or not. But There was,
I'm English,
you're English,
listeners. I'm
that I
English.
know, but there actually was a famous airplane crash in or close to the town of where you live,
Oh,
in
Bournemouth.
Bournemouth. Yes.
Okay. This is news to me. I did not know this.
Yes. Okay. Well, you,
I have an alibi.
well, I think you have an alibi because it happened in 1910. So
Oh, God,
I think
definitely.
even your
Yes.
grandparents have alibis.
I was definitely elsewhere. Yes.
Yes. So the pair of entrepreneurs known as Rolls and Royce, who created cars, so Charles Stewart
Brilliant. Yep.
Rolls was killed in a plane crash on the 12th of July, 1910, in Bournemouth. When he was 32 years old. He was actually the very first Briton to be killed in an aeronautical accident with a powered aircraft. He was flying a Wright Flyer, which the tail broke off of it while he was flying over Bournemouth.
I what a statistic to have as part of your family history. I'm so glad that they have the car manufacturing to get back on, rather than, so we haven't got some like descendant of Rolls. Was it Rolls? Who was like, oh yeah, my great granddad, first man to die in a plane crash in Bournemouth.
Are you familiar with the Hengistbury Airfield?
I'm familiar with Hengistbury Head. It is a beach we go to for a dog walk on very often.
Okay, so it's close to where
So
you are.
I didn't know there was an air. I don't know if there's an airfield around there at all. I've never seen it if it is.
Well, apparently maybe they closed it down. I don't know, but
It's now a memorial.
yes. I mean, his grave is further away, I guess, because it's in Langetak-Vibbenavel at St.
Okay,
Cadoc
not familiar with
Church.
that place either.
Yeah. And it
Yeah, Hengistbury Airfield not coming up in any maps I'm looking at.
okay. That Hengistbury.
Yeah, Hengistbury,
Hengistbury, right.
I visit often. Yeah.
Okay. The epitaph on his grave is, "Blessed are the pure of heart, for they shall see God."
Okay. Well,
Yeah,
wow. Good luck to him.
exactly. So,
Yeah, we were at Hengistbury just last week.
now you know next time you're there to look around for something that might talk about Charles Stewart Rolls.
Okay.
You never know. This is somewhat in homage to what our good friends the Midnight Boys did on Titanic, where every week they talked about
Yes.
different sea disasters. So I decided,
Yep.
why not do something in the same vein and talk about air disasters that have happened.
Do you have another segment based on air beasts, air monster facts?
Sorry.
That's a shame.
I couldn't find 24 of those. Didn't do that.
So you have a crash of the week you'll be doing.
More or less. Yeah. All right. So, Jay, you want to tell people once again how they can get in touch with you?
Sure. So another podcast I am on often is the Lamcast, a show I used to host. It's the official podcast of the large association of movie blogs, the LAM. And normally every month I host Lampity, which is the movie trivia, very similar to Jeopardy. At the time of recording, it has been a couple of months since one came out. I'm having some scheduling issues this year, but it will come back soon, hopefully. It is a lot of fun. Rob has been on and submitted questions many times. I'm very grateful for that. But yeah, Lampity, you can find it on the Lamcast everywhere that movie podcasts can be found, pretty
All
much.
right, great. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, or you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here.